Get snacking and get cracking with a snack that packs a protein punch. Pistachios are known for their protein power, fiber, and better-for-you unsaturated fats for a combination that may help you keep feeling fuller longer. Wonderful Pistachios is a good source of protein with zero guilt. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. I love that they come in a variety of sizes and flavors, making this the perfect protein snack for any on-the-go adventure. Check out wonderfulpistachios.com to learn more about how these little green wonders can power up your day.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hello, everybody. Sorry, I had my shades on. It's pitch black in here. Welcome to the Flow Track Podcast, powered by Wonderful Pistachios. I'm Livek Pone, joined with Ashley Titians and Corey Mall, a.k.a. our chat guy. Today, we're going to be highlighting the Brian Clay Penn Relay Fields. Corey and I will be on the ground covering the Boston Marathon this weekend. Ashley will be running it. Crossing our fingers. So, of course, we're going to dive everything track and field and also marathon. But before we do that, we got to talk about the eclipse because
I was going to say, I love how you're saying all this and like not reading notes and I can't see a dang thing.
That's very good.
Oh, man. I was like, that's impressive.
Actually, I can barely see the bottom of my computer because looking straight, I can't see anything. Like all of a sudden it got really quiet and then our producer got in my ear and was like, you're live. And I was like, oh yeah, thanks. Because I can't see.
Like, I'm looking right now and I'm just like, I'm not sure where I'm looking. I'm like, you're here.
Where
is there? So yeah, this eclipse. Let's talk about it.
Let's talk about it, because we just literally came in from outside.
Corey, thoughts? You were about to say something.
Well, no, I got some neon lights reflecting off of my glasses, so I kind of feel like I'm like Ryan Gosling in Drive, you know?
I've never seen that, so I can't. I don't know what you're talking about.
All right, I'm taking my shades off, because
I'll do the little...
It was a little crazy.
Tip of the glasses.
I should do that. Tip of the glasses. We're gonna leave these on the whole show.
It was an interesting show, I think. We all went outside. Yes. You know, Austin is made up of basically a split in between our city is like this town lake, obviously, and it's very popular. There's a trail right next to it. If you have ever been to Austin, you've been there. And there were a million people out on the trail and on the bridges just sort of waiting for it.
It was crazy. And all of a sudden, like, we got out there at, like, 1:10. So the eclipse was supposed to happen around 1:36, approximately. So we're out there at 1:10, getting situated. And there were moments, because it's so cloudy in Austin today. It's just very, very overcast. Yeah. So there were moments where you would hear people start screaming. And you're going to, like, put the glasses on. You're looking up. You're like, oh, my gosh, I can see the sun. Like, it was crazy. Yeah. It was a whole thing. But it was so cloudy.
Eclipse mania. But it was like we were in the path of totality. It got so dark.
It got very dark.
We did not have a great viewpoint for it because of the cloud cover.
Right.
Like other parts of Texas were probably a little bit more ideal. I heard out in Fredericksburg, they had a little bit broader viewpoint. Eagle Pass. I texted a coach in Eagle Pass.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, a lot of people are here right now. So a couple places in Texas really got like,
to see it.
The full
4 minutes.
Experience. Yeah. Yeah.
But it got really dark.
It got to the point where the street lights were coming on, because I feel like it's just
it's like the sensor
with
yeah.
darkness. So all of a sudden you're seeing the street lights come on, and it gave me like Harry Potter vibes. It was,
I'm not sure about Harry Potter, more
oh
like
no,
apocalypse,
it was
like zombies about to take
Harry
over.
Harry Potter was about to fly in on
I think
a broom.
Corey
on
the it same was, page.
It, yeah.
Harry Potter was about to fly in on a broom.
It wasn't long enough, no.
But it was just like,
that's also
dark.
What kind of made it wild. It's like it gets dark and then it got light so quickly afterward. That was wild.
Yes. So we're going to keep it on the eclipse chat real quick. So we're going to rank eclipse compared to other eclipses. So let's start with the car. Mitsubishi Eclipse. How does the eclipse that we experienced today rate against the Mitsubishi Eclipse?
Have you ever been in a Mitsubishi Eclipse?
I don't think I've ever been in one.
I think no. I think Mitsubishi wins.
You think so?
Yeah. Yes, 100%.
I feel like now I gotta look
up. Yeah, I'm looking.
I didn't
up
do
now.
My research.
Hey,
I didn't.
This is like a late '90s model. It's a sports
car. Oh, I see.
You know?
I've seen these before.
Yeah, I've seen them.
That beats a real eclipse. I don't know. I thought that was kind of cool out there.
It was cool.
We saw how Olivia reacted to that.
I wish
she
I
was
forgot
screaming
to put that in
at there. The screaming at the
well,
sun.
I was like, I see it.
I think
see
Olivia
it.
Should be four higher for any know, hype moment
agreed.
In someone's life.
Yeah.
There we go. I'm all for it.
Because the way that she was, oh my gosh, I see yeah. it. Like the,
it was just
I need
moment.
That sometimes. Maybe someone needs that in their everyday life, you know, just
you know,
yeah, personal hype man.
I'm. Hire me. I'm good.
You know those commercials know. From way back? I think it was Terry Crews in The Office. He would just like bulldoze people in the office. And
oh, yes. Terry yeah. Tate, office linebacker.
Terry
those
Tate
are
office
epic.
Linebacker.
I love that commercial.
Just substitute Olivia in The Office. You get a promotion.
Woo! Ultimate hype woman.
Oh, that's great.
You got
I
a new
that.
Project.
That is me. That is me on the daily. I love it. I'm all for it. Okay, song, Total Eclipse of the Heart.
That's
Ashley.
A pretty epic song. Have you heard the rendition of it from,
no,
from Diary of a Wimpy Kid?
I should have. Oh, no. I should have listened
you
to it.
You would reference that movie.
You know what I'm talking about, though, right?
I mean, barely. Like, I haven't watched it. I think that's outside my demographic when it came
I mean, very epic song. Kind of cheesy, but I don't know.
Okay.
How do you think it ranks the eclipse?
I don't think I've listened.
It's hard to compare these because, I mean, they're all eclipses, but different.
This. So,
what would you say?
I still am taking the actual eclipse.
You're taking the actual eclipse?
I saw.
I feel like I can't rate it because I don't think I've listened to this.
How many of these things do you know?
I know the last two.
Song. I think songs stoke emotion. So, yeah, I'm going to say song over actual eclipse.
Okay.
Yeah.
Movie. Which I was just playing the trailer because I've seen all the Twilights and I was like, which one was Eclipse? So Twilight Eclipse, you said you've never seen it.
I've never seen it, never read it, have no desire to
read
or see it.
Oh,
so
man.
I'm just going to put that all the way down the bottom.
That
the list. Zero
Eclipse
rating.
Was an interesting, that was an interesting movie. I'd still pick the clips we saw today over the movie.
Same.
Okay. Final. I don't know why we have this under food, but Eclipse Gub, I realize. We were just talking about this, and I was like, wait, I think I chew Eclipse gum, because it's at my desk. So boom, Eclipse gum or the actual Eclipse?
Eclipse gum.
I may have to go Eclipse gum, because I steal it from your desk almost daily.
Yeah.
So
all of a sudden, Ashley comes up, she's like, Liv, can I steal a piece of gum? I'm like, absolutely, you can take it off my desk anytime. I'm going to have to say gum, too, because I chew it on the regular.
Okay.
So Eclipse gum. Okay.
I'm glad we had this discussion.
Yeah, I'm glad we know. Where the eclipse falls in regards to the stuff we see and listen.
But
and
hey,
watch.
Monumental day. Really. Monumental day. When's this going to happen next?
I know.
Probably won't see one.
For a while. Because
Will
we were talking about
lifetimes.
Well, the last time we saw an eclipse was it 17?
Yeah.
So.
I remember that one. I remember
that one. So is
I remember that one.
Can we safely say it's almost every 17
okay, wait.
Or so?
No.
A solar eclipse. It's a lower... 2045.
Okay, so
all right.
We were part of history.
Yeah.
Part of history.
Wait, you said, when's the next
in
one?
In 21 years.
21 years?
Oh, wait. Yes, 21 years. It'll be visible in 48 states.
I don't think I would care that much in 21 years to really, like, plan out my...
Yeah, I don't think I would plan it.
My schedule. But if I'm near it, I'm going to see it.
Because sure. Even today, I was like, okay, the eclipse is happening. Cool. But then everybody in the office was getting excited, and I was like, okay,
I don't know. Maybe I just get excited for things
I'll
like
go
that.
For the,
it's history.
I'll go for the venture. That's what I like to call it. Okay, so in 21 years.
Yeah. All right.
Have to hit each other up and be like, what's up? Let's plan
this
out.
Right. I'm glad that this can also be remembered as we're talking about this on the FlowTrack podcast.
I know.
You know, there's a moment in history remembered on the pod.
Exactly. I love it. All right, let's switch gears. We got to talk about some breaking news that occurred from the top of this morning. It's when it hit our computers. USATF announces that it will not send a 2024 World U20 Championship team to Peru. The reasons we're citing that they couldn't take the team
over the summer is because of safety, the late event date, and the competitive readiness, according to the USATF release. This has been blowing up on social message boards, you name it. People are talking about it. You even put up a response on the story, and people are just like flooding it right now. What are our thoughts on when you heard the news, Ashley? What was going through your mind?
Well, it was a random set of news, first off, to get randomly on a Monday morning in April. It's just a shame, you know? Like, I think that was my first reaction. It's like, wow, like, these kids, they want to go compete. Like, this is a chance that they have to make an international team to compete globally, and now they're not going to have that opportunity, which that's tough, you know, for a kid. Like, maybe that, you know, this is their last year for have a chance to do something like this, you know? Like, it sucks that way. I mean, if you look more into it, it's just interesting that the reasons, you know, like if you read the release, they say they include safety because if you look, there's, you know, travel advisories to Peru, I think by the State Department for the U.S. I think they're listed at, there's four different levels. There's like level one is like fine, safe. Two is like
caution.
Travel with caution. Yeah, it's at a two. If you look at other nations, other countries on this list, I mean, Antarctica was at level two. I'll just leave it at that. Then, you know, when they're talking about competitive readiness, like, this isn't anything new, really, you know, like, from what we've seen in the past. Like, they always have those U20 trials at the end of June, in that June timeframe, and then compete in August. Like, there's not really a big change. I think it's just so, to me, it's like, it just, I don't know. I hurt for those kids. I do.
I think it's heartbreaking, especially because it's so, I consider this very close to trials. Like, we're just a few months away. And the fact that USATF, like, combined it with Nike Outdoor Nationals, it kind of, like, made me think, this is, like, an interesting move. And then all of a sudden here, it's, like, a huge announcement that we're just not going to send a team. So I really feel for these kids because, like you said, a lot of them are probably preparing for this opportunity to, and some of them might not be able to hit like the Olympic standard because that's the only other option you have. You either go to high school, I'm just thinking about the high school kids, high school nationals, or that's it. And especially now when you're, you know, out of high school, the only other option you have is the Olympic trials. And some of these athletes might not be able to make an Olympic team, but have an opportunity to make the World U20 team.
Yeah.
To then it being, you know, just taken away like that. So, Corey, do you have any thoughts on this? Well, what are your feelings?
I want to ask you because one of the reasons, as Ashley said, was there was a travel advisory to Peru.
Yeah.
Now, you have been part of US U20 teams before, correct?
Yes, correct.
What is the process on traveling and then experiencing a location to then compete at? Like, what kind of, like, areas are you getting into, like, what areas do you have to be concerned with when you travel?
Yeah, great question. So I made two USA teams. I made the World Youth Team and then the World Junior Team, which was considered like the U20 team. So the most recent team I made, we were in Barcelona, Spain, and we were essentially there for a week. We never left the village at all. When I made the World Youth Team, we were actually in Singapore for a whole entire month. We literally stayed in the village. We left the village one time, but it was a team bonding activity where we got to explore Singapore a little bit with, obviously, people watch, like the chaperones and USATF was there with us. So we were never alone. This was not something we planned on our own to, like, leave the village. Like, we always had an adult with us. And even when we were in Spain, again, there for a week, I don't even remember leaving the village at all. So I was pretty much contained in one spot the whole entire time. So when I hear stuff like this, it puts a huge question mark on, you know, the travel advisory thing, because we're literally staying in one spot the whole time. You know, like, we're not able to leave. It's pretty much on lockdown. And if you were to have to move around, like, there has to be an official with you from, you know, your respected country. So I just, that's why there's a huge question mark for me revolving all of this.
Yeah, I think when you're sending like delegations to foreign countries, there's probably higher, I think, protocols to follow from a U.S. standpoint than maybe other nations. Yeah. I mean, I think back to 2021 when they decided not to bring a U.S. contingent to Nigeria, and they cited basically the same factors. COVID had to deal with it, safety precautions in Nigeria. And, you know, I can understand that. But they've had teams go to Peru before. Senior mm-hmm. teams go to Peru in recent years. I mean, I don't understand the issue there. If it comes down to money, if you're coming off an Olympic year where you're putting a lot of budget into the U.S. senior team in Paris, like, I can understand that. Like,
right.
Just tell us the truth. Like, I don't.
Yes, if that's what it is, just.
It doesn't, like, these factors that they have listed, competitive readiness, are we
kidding? That, like, that one got me.
That was it for me. That was it for me. The competitive readiness.
I think that's the one that everyone's hung up on, if I'm being very honest. It's like, what is that? It's the U.S. And it's no different, like, than any other previous year when you're taking a World U20 team, right? Like, it's around the same time frame. Like, so what's the difference that, oh, during July, you may not be running in a, you know, a meet or something like that. Like, what does that matter?
I just shake my head. That's shaking my head.
And we got a
in the shrug emoji.
We got a question on the chat. Will there still be a U20 championships? Yes. But this is integrated into Nike Outdoor Nationals, which is a high school national championship. The USATF and National Scholastic Foundation have partnered to integrate that meet series into that program, which has never been done before. And also coming on the heels of this. So
it just makes you think. It really makes you think, like, I don't know. What are the politics involved a little bit? You know, like that. I don't know. Maybe I don't need to go anywhere besides that. But
Yeah. Just to be very clear, like the USA, not USA, the U20 World Championships are occurring. USATF just decided that they're not taking a team there. So this is still happening. So other countries that decide to go, they will be able to compete in Peru. But USATF made the decision this morning that we're not sending a team at all.
And what is the likelihood, if at all, that they change their decision?
I don't.
Do you think that has ever been done before? Do you think it will happen?
I want it to change.
I wish it could change, but, like, do you think they're going to listen? I don't know. That's the question.
Who?
Because this happened before. Like, just a couple years ago, they didn't take
it. I guess, but that's different because of the COVID stuff.
Right.
Like,
that was an actual safety concern. Yeah. Like, who is happy about this decision? No one. No one is going to be like, well, I can understand it. I think the only people that leave thinking they're making a decision on behalf of others is USATF. And then the delegation of U.S. athletes, coaches, like, they're going to be questioning, well, why?
And then it's just interesting, too, to think about. This is just another added piece that I'll throw in there. It's like, what is it saying from, you know, USATF? What are they saying to World Athletics, considering in 2026, the World U20 Championships are going to be in Eugene? So if you're not investing in sending, you know, kids to this now in 2024, what's to say, like, you're going to care about the World U20 Championships in 2026? I think that's also a valid question.
That's
like, what does
question.
That say about your investment in, you know, U20 athletics and stuff, and your in Team USA there, and just World U20 athletics as a whole?
That's very true. That's a great question.
I don't know.
It does not look good.
No.
And you take the U.S. team outside the equation. This is a lesser meet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, the U.S. has dominated some of these formats for the last 20 plus years. So if you take US team away, it's a different meet entirely.
Yeah, for sure.
My brain is just thinking, because, like, we talked about, like, the COVID year, so we're coming off that. Cool. Then we get here, same thing. So what's going to happen for the next U20 championships? Are we, you know, well, besides us hosting it, like, outside of us having it, what does that look like? Are we ever going to have a U20?
It's like the person who only likes to have house parties, but they don't like to go anywhere else.
That's a good bet. That's a good comparison.
There we go. Well, guess we'll have to wait and see. So my feeling, like, my heart breaks for.
Yeah, because I know we also, like, we put
a
this.
A lot of these athletes.
I know we shared it on social media. We, like, put it out there. And just, like, seeing that some of the replies, because we asked, like, athletes, like, hey, like, drop your thoughts on, you know, this happening. And a lot of them were just, like, they're just sad, you know, like, some people said that it was their goal to, you know, qualify and compete at, you know, USA U20s and then hopefully qualify for the world team. Like, this is something that people actually had, you know, they had it circled on their calendar, you know, like you mentioned, it's April, like, we're in the middle of outdoor season. That was part of some people's championship, like, postseason plans. And so I think it's just a shame.
Yeah.
It's just too close for me. It's like the timing of it is not right.
Yeah.
Like, if you would have done this starting of the school year, like, yeah, I would have been hurt. But then I don't know if some of the reasonings, maybe the reasonings behind it for me, I would have been like, oh, okay, maybe. But the fact that you're doing this in April, when we're just a few months away from trials, it's just,
yeah,
the timing is really, really.
And, like, then, like, what's the incentive of going to trials, too, at There's the same none. Time? Like, to be a USU 20 champion?
Because now all the freshmen and the, like, yeah, freshmen in college will now have to experience, like, the only option they have now is Olympic trials. That's
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
So, tough. It was a tough morning. Tough morning. But to kind of lighten up the mood, there were still some fantastic things that occurred over the weekend. So these are our top moments from the weekend. So Ashley, I'm going to pass it off to you. What was that highlight for you?
Well, I don't know if you guys saw this, but we had a collegiate record go down over the weekend, and that came from Oregon's Jada Ross. New collegiate record in the women's shot put, 1971 meters, which is it's 64 feet, 8 inches in the shot put. Incredible. She did this at the Triton Invitational in California. And I think this is one where it just kind of happened and it popped up in some of my news feeds. And I was like, oh, I didn't expect that to happen. And, you know, it's a huge mark. And so to me, that, you know, that kudos to her. I believe it's the fifth toss right now in the world this year on world rankings, which is, you know, pretty incredible. So I think she's definitely put herself on that list as someone we got to watch for, you know, this outdoor season, especially as we get closer to June when you have NCAAs and, you know, Olympic trials as well.
Awesome. I love that. I love seeing collegiate records fall and the fact that it is April. Still got a couple more months exactly. left of competition. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So more time to improve on that mark. For me, I was really excited to see Clement Ducos of Tennessee. He ran the NCAA number one time so far in the 400-meter hurdles with a 49.03. And I think what's impressive for me is this was his season opener, and he opened up with a personal best. And just kind of looking into his resume, last year he was seventh at the SEC Outdoor Championships. He then qualified for, made it through regionals, qualified for NCAAs, but he also was a member of the French U23 national team, who won the indoor national title in the 400-meter dash. He went 47.27. He also made other U23 championships in the 400-meter hurdles back in 2022. So he has experience competing at that international level and doing great things in Tennessee this year. So looking pretty solid to kick off the outdoor season. I know I was talking about this, I think, a couple shows ago, where we're kind of in that weird area of outdoor where it's just like everybody's running relays, and now we're about to start seeing some of those individual events kick off because most of them are preparing for now the Olympics. So we're starting to see some of the fine tuning stuff there. So Corey, how about for you? Anything that stood out?
Arcadia.
Yeah, you want to talk about that specifically? The boys 32. I think there's it was kind of historic, and when you look at the numbers, so you want to talk about that a little bit?
Well, it was an epic race. I mean, when you think about putting the best distance runners in the country in a race, you know, Arcadia had it on Saturday. You had Danny Simmons, who lost NXN, you know, pretty publicly to JoJo Jordan in December. So he's been having a bit of a redemptive couple of months, getting back to what he was. So Danny Simmons in this race from American Force. We had JoJo Jordan, who won NXN. We had Drew Griffith, who won Foot Locker. Ryan Pajak, Ethan Edgeworth, Josiah Tostenson. Basically, you know, the who's who of high school distance runners. And when you think at the indoor national championships, you know, Daniel Simmons ran the 5K, but he didn't run the 2 mile against Griffith. So you're stacking up head to head against one another. And ultimately, it came down to the final lap, and it was Danny Simmons with the 57.52 final lap to take the win in 8:34, which was, I believe, 7 all time in 1300 meters. It wasn't a national record, but he ends up beating all the guys who beat him over cross country. So what does that say about Danny Simmons at this point of the year?
He's the guy to beat. Again, I think I was really excited for this race because we were seeing just all those heavy hitters that we see on the high school distance side, like going head to head, which you don't get that very often. You know, so many national championship meets and stuff, to see them all there racing in the same race was pretty cool. I think for me, the highlight though, is if you look, like, I think there were 37 guys under 9 minutes, and then I think what blew me away is we had 7 under 840, I believe. I mean, that to me is the number right there. Like, I remember last year watching Arcadia, because that was when Simeon Birnbaum, I believe, set the all-time best for the 3200, I think 833. And it was him, Danny Simmons, and a couple others. I mean, they all went under 840. And I was like, wow, that's just incredible. But then we see seven this year do that. Like, and then some that were just outside. Like, I think Manny Perez, like, he was one that stood out to me. Like, probably was on no one's radar. And I believe he ran 840 exact, to believe. So I think that just says something about distance running right now in the U.S., especially at the high school level. Yeah.
American Fork had three runners under 850. I believe they had 409.
I think you're right. Yeah. It was
and they won the 4x1600 the day earlier, too. So if we're talking about best distance programs, I mean, Harriman won NXN.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But American Fork, like, you know, you're coming back with a pretty good statement, I think, in these races. So, good for them.
Yeah, solid performance there in Arcadia, which was a really great meet to just, like, everyone just put out great times there, which was super spectacular. All right, let's talk about Penn Relays.
We're so close.
My favorite meet of the year outside of trials. I think the environment is all I need to just fill up my cup going into the weekend. I love Penn Relays. So we're going to break down some of the Olympic development Penn Relay fields, which have been officially announced. We have the men's 800 and the women's 1500 meters as well. So let's talk about the women's 15 first. I know you and I are both excited to see Josette Andrews, who is the defending champion in this event, come back to Penn. Put something really exciting.
Yeah, I remember watching her. We were at Penn last year, obviously. Yeah. And I remember watching Josette run that race last year and win. And she had just a really phenomenal race. Like, she looked really, I thought, really strong throughout. And I thought it was a great showing. And again, doing it at Franklin Field and in front of that crowd is always really fun. And she did that despite some of the, you know, the cold, the wind, the rain. You know, it wasn't great conditions. But excited she's coming back here to do that again. I'm also really excited for Nia Akins, who we know more of an 800-meter specialist, but she's going to go up in distance and run the 1,500 here. We've seen her go, I believe, gosh, like 157, 158 in the 800. Mm-hmm. So I'm really curious to see how, you know, we know it's an Olympic year, right? Like, what's she been doing and training to hone in on some of that, but also extend herself out, have more of that endurance to run the 15 potentially.
Yeah, and I know our fans who are watching this live on YouTube just saw the whole list of athletes there that will be competing in that 1500 along with Jose and Niem. Also excited to see Sage Herta Klecker, who has gone 204 in the 800 meter. She actually ran that in Boulder this past weekend. So again, just a really solid group of 1500 meter runners there. You can see it on your screen, kind of that full list there. So it's going to be a great race. And you see Josette crossing that finish line with all the excitement. And so I think she's going to definitely bring that same energy to Penn Relays this year. She won it in a 404. So great running last year. So let's talk about, Corey, any thoughts on the women's 15?
Oh, I'm all in on Nia Akins and this group running the 800. I mean, the only question we always have heading into Philadelphia is, will we get great weather?
That's always the question.
Ideal weather to help these runners on that side of the equation. Hopefully we do.
Man, last year, Ashley has some stories for y'all just about
me specifically.
Well, like, I remember you like dropped, like, you dropped like an SD card or something.
No, I dropped my mic. My mic fell off my camera. I didn't realize when I was sprinting across the field, and then I had to pull it out of a puddle. And then my camera it was your camera that I was borrowing. And it like stopped working because it was wet.
And I just remember sideline reporting, and at one point my umbrella, I think, flipped. I don't think it was during an interview, but I could feel the wind trying to take my umbrella, so that was fun.
I'm just praying we don't have a situation like that. I already had a little bit of it at Stanford.
Yes.
That's at the Stanford Invitational. It was giving me very much Penn Relays downpour vibes, and I'm just hoping that doesn't carry over to Penn.
So hopefully that just stayed in Stanford.
Yeah, it doesn't
go to the other side of the coast.
Yeah.
Because the year before that, Corey and I, we had some sunshine. I think were you there for that? No.
No,
you weren't there yet.
Before me.
Before Ashley time. So there was one day where it was like really hot, sunny. It was great. Fantastic.
We'll have to see.
So hopefully we get better weather this year too. Okay, back to the men's 800 field. Little snippet there of the weather. I've actually have it on my phone now where I'm tracking Philadelphia's weather. So far it looks like it's been in the 60s.
So I can handle 60s.
Lovely.
Great. All right. Men's 800 field. Again, we're going to have that full list for y'all up there. But lots of great names to kind of look out for. We've had some world finalists that are going to be in this mix too. So Ashley, who's that athlete that you're looking forward to seeing?
For me, it's Mario Garcia Romo. I mean, he's by far, to me, I think the headliner here. He's got that experience, especially the 1500 at, you know, the world stage. I believe he finished sixth at the World Championships in Budapest last summer, ran 3:30 there. He finished fourth, I believe, in 2022, and it was in Oregon in the same distance. So now we're going to see him in that 800, right? And so he's definitely going to be the guy to beat, I think. And I'm just curious to see what his training's been like, you know, in that transition from, you know, into such a big season. You know, it's kind of interesting for me, I think. Like, what does this race mean for some of these athletes in preparation for each next step? Like, how does Penn Relays and running here fit into their calendar and like what they're planning to do and like where they are in their training cycles? I think is interesting.
That's really
interesting. Is he the guy to beat?
I don't know. I think so.
He actually hasn't run the 800 all that often. His PR is 146.9. So I do think he comes into this kind of as a fighter rather than a favorite.
Ooh,
I think
fighter.
Festus Legat enters with a 144.3, which is one of the top times. He's 27. He's pretty much in his prime. I would say he's got a very good opportunity along with Kyle Langford of Great Britain. I'm looking at those two, but also the 19-year-old from Kenya, Noah Kibet. He's run 144.9. I think he's going to be a really interesting runner to keep an eye on as the season progresses. He's obviously very young, but very talented. But I like Garcia Romo, but he's going to have to kind of enter into a territory that he doesn't have a ton of experience.
I guess it would depend like how they decide to take out the race too. Like if they're going like all out from the beginning, like he probably doesn't have much of a chance against some of these guys that can run 44. But if it comes down to tactics,
yeah,
maybe.
Yeah. I'm interesting that you mentioned Legat because he ran that in 2022. So recently he's gone 147. That was back in February during the indoor season. So it's going to be really interesting because you have people that, like, you have Legat, who has that personal best of 144, but then there's, like, three gentlemen who have gone 146, like, recently during the indoor season. You have Sam Ellis, Luciano Fiore, and Luis Peralta. So I feel like you've got a combination of a lot of people that have all their strengths. So it's going to be a very interesting 800 field, for sure.
Hey. I'm excited.
So those are the officially announced Olympic development races so far. As we get closer to Pan, it's crazy to think we're like 2 weeks out.
Yeah.
Crazy to think. So definitely stay tuned for social posts because Ashley's doing a great job of making sure, keeping you guys in the loop. Penn Relays is going to let us know too when big things are to come. So make sure you stay tuned for that. But the biggest, one of the biggest races of the weekend is Brian Clay, which is awesome. Our guy, Brian Dybul, is actually there now. So we have a lot of things to uncover here. There's a lot of top entries in the men's 1500. There's about 837 athletes. The men's 5K has about 591. So we have a lot of, you know, great heavy depth fields here. So let's talk about which event we feel like is probably going to make the most impact as we look forward to the rest of the season. Ashley, what stands out to you?
Well, first off, Brian Clay Invitational, huge meet, you know, out in California. We have it live on Flow Track. It's a 3-day event. As you already kind of alluded to, 837 athletes entered in a 1500. Like, come on. Like, that's
awesome.
Insane.
Like, awesome.
How many heats is that going to be?
How many hours does that?
How many hours?
All I'm saying
that's
is that
question.
I'm praying.
How many
for
hours?
You, Brian, I'm praying for you. That's going to be, those are some long days, but. Yeah, so I think, you know, Brian Clay, especially on that distance side, like there's, you know, that's where you're going to see the big names really come out and try to compete against each other, right? And so if you're looking to me, it would be impossible. I could say every event, every distance event is one to watch. Yeah. But if I had to pick one that would have the most impact on the rest of the season, I think it's the men's 1500, right? If you're looking specifically at some of the collegiate athletes that caught my eye, they're going to be, I would assume, in like these top heats. Colin Solomon, Gary Martin, Luke Hauser, Liam Murphy, Haptam Samuel, Nathan Green. Like, these are all guys that, like, can kind of, I don't want to say show your cards yet, but, like, you can kind of, like, you can go out there and run a fast time and show everyone, like, hey, this is where my fitness is at right now, and it's only April, you know? Like, And not only that, but some of these guys can get top marks that'll get them into regionals. And, you know, again, I mentioned there are so many people entered, but this is the time where you get into a competitive field and you get that regional qualifying mark. And that's not to mention, too, like, we have pros in this race as well. I believe we have Craig Engels in this race. I think I saw Matthew Centrowitz on the list, too. So there's things at play there as well.
Yeah, I think you and I are on the same wavelength there, because you talked about the men's 1500. For me, it's the women's 1500, because I looked at like the top entries for this, and you pretty much have everybody in here that was in the final for the mile during the indoor season, including Billa Chipruo from OK State. She was the runner-up. Melissa Riggins was fourth. Margot Appleton was fifth. Sally McCabe, Claudia Kazaraska, like the list just goes on, like even all the way up to the ninth place finisher. So for me, the 1500 is kind of an opportunity, like you said, for the men's side, kind of showing your cards. It's kind of hard to think, like, you have some of the NCAA finalists competing at Brian Clay, kind of, you know, testing the waters a little bit. I think it's some bragging rights at the end of the day, being like, hey.
Yeah, and I mean, we saw some of this at Stanford, you know, like, yeah. It was kind of, again, like, this is a big, I would argue, a big distance showcase. This is where you want to get the, you know, you want to be able to compete to get those top marks. And so it's right. Kind of the same situation. Like, you know, if you're in that position, like, you want to be able to travel and compete against the best. Like, that's how you're going to get those times that you need. And there are those places, really, it's rankings, too, that get you into inter-regionals.
Mm-hmm. Corey, any thoughts from you?
You go where the entries are.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep. You know, yeah. This has become a place of choice for distance runners. Colin Salmon. At Azusa, he broke the high school national record at 3,200 meters 2 years ago. So he's very familiar with Azusa, being from Newberry Park. I do like him in this race. Nathan Green, as you mentioned, too. A lot of the college guys, I'm just waiting for them to sort of battle it out, a heavyweight, you know, boxing match, and see what they can do.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be exciting there in Brian Clay. All right, now that we talked about, like, the events that could potentially shake things up later down the road, who are our top athletes to watch out for? Ashley.
I got to go with my guy, Habtum Samuel.
I knew it.
It's funny because I feel like I've been a fan of him since, like, cross country.
Yes.
Because we picked, remember? We had to pick who we thought was going to win. And I was the only one who picked Habtum Samuel. It came down to the finish.
It did come down to the finish.
Anyways, I think this guy is still, dare I say, underrated. Because, or maybe not underrated, but, like,
overlooked
maybe. Because... Okay. You know, I think back to, like, when I was at the 10, obviously Nico Young set the, you know, collegiate all-time best of the 10K there, insane mark, but only a couple places back and, like, 2 seconds back from him was Habtum Samuel, and if not for Nico, he would have set the collegiate record there for the 10K, and I remember I went and talked to him afterwards, and I was, like, one of the only people talking to him, you know, like, it almost, like, seems like he was overlooked a little bit, and I was, like, had a genuine conversation. He was, like, man, he's, like, I had a great race, but shout out to Nico, just... If only Nico had not been in that race, I would have been the collegiate record holder. So we're going to see him, I believe, in the 15 and the 5K at Brian Clay. Obviously, we know he has speed. I think he went 13:14, I believe, indoors in the 5K. Excited to see what he could do outdoors.
Love it. All right, I have three athletes because it was hard for me to pick one. Of course, I'm bringing it back with my guy Sam Whitmarsh, okay? Proud Aggie over here, so cheering for my Aggies. 144, 46 in the 800. Next up, our girl, Michaela Rose. Okay? She's going to be in that 800, but she's also going to be in that 1,500-meter race as well. And we just talked about how stacked that 1,500-meter race was, just looking at them. You got some of the top athletes that were at NCAAs in that mile, and here she's going to just kind of maneuver herself into that field a little bit.
She's not, you know, she's not new to the 15.
Right,
she
yeah.
She has a PR of 4:11. I mean, that's no joke right there, like, running, you know, in college. And, you know, as we mentioned, like, and she said this too, we asked her the question at the NCAA indoor press conference because no one really knows that she runs. People overlook the fact that she runs cross country. Like, she comes from a distance background. Like, she did this all as a youth. Like, it shouldn't be a surprise that we see her go up to the 15. But, like, I think people have now just associated her so much with the 800 that it's like, oh, we're going to silo her into that. No, she can still run a 4:11 or probably faster at this point in the 15.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And she's been doing that for a long time.
Yeah. So I'm excited to see what she does there. And then just, of course, it wouldn't be a show if we didn't talk about Parker Valby. Okay. So Parker Valby, she showed that she could do the 3K, 5K double indoors this weekend, 5K, 10K, potentially. It's a lot of running over the course of a couple days. So Parker Valby is entered in both those distance races.
I mean, hey, it's good practice for NCAAs if, like, that's what she decides she wants to go and do. Like, it's a chance to go try it out, see how you do, see what you can run. You're competing against, basically, it's kind of a preview of NCAAs, one could say.
It is.
When you're looking at some of them, I mean, Hilda Olamomoy will be in competing against her as well. She, I would argue she's been her top competitor to Valby for, you know, this past year. So yeah, excited to see what she can do.
Yeah. Corey, athletes on your radar.
Do you think her training has changed at all?
No.
Do you think she's doing,
you know, I really don't actually think so.
I don't, maybe.
Hey, mic drop. I like
mic drop.
I like the 10K there with Parker Valby, but on the guy side, actually, Alex Phillips, University of North Carolina, former D3 guy, champion at I think, Carroll. A really great find by Coach Miltenberg to get into UNC this year, and has been great. I'm curious to see what he'll do in the 10K overall. And we don't have a spot for this on the show today, but we're getting a shout-out from our guy All in the Game, Quincy Wilson. 150 this weekend. We didn't really talk about it. I don't know if we had a spot for it. I just wanted to mention it. Quincy Wilson, 150.
Hey, why don't we just, we can take that as a segue, maybe a little off tangent here.
Yes.
We just finished up our discussion on Brian Clay, what we had. So Quincy talk, anyone?
Yes, let's talk Quincy. Just insert Quincy Wilson into the conversation. 150 is incredible.
Yes, he runs this at the Beach Run Invitational in Myrtle Beach, competing against his own teammate Colin Abrams, who went 149 indoors at New Balance, and he beats him. I don't know if you guys have seen any of the footage.
I saw the last 150. I think
it was the last 300 I saw. I mean, Colin was out there, like he was ahead of Quincy, and Quincy was the one who outkicked him there at the end and used some of that 400 speed to get the win. I know we've had this conversation before on the Line podcast, where I think we were talking about, like, what did we think Quincy could run in an 800?
What did I say? I think I said
152. Do you remember?
I think we settled closer to like 155, but originally you had something outrageous out there.
Wait, who?
You did. I think you had something outrageous out there. But when he did run the 4x8 indoors, he ran like 157 or 158, something like that, and he anchored the team, I think. It wasn't a great 800. So to see this weekend.
I'm kind
of
shocked.
A huge, I think, you know, disparity from his first race to now.
It makes me think, too, because I feel like I think I also said in that conversation, if I'm thinking back on it, like, this was before we saw what he did in the 400 indoors.
Correct. We must
before
this was
before
like
before we saw what we did, you know, he did to open outdoors. Like, this was, I think, early indoor. I think I also said at that point, I was like, I think he has the makings to be an 800 specialist when he gets to college. I mean, now maybe you're running. I mean, now that he's running 45, whatever, maybe that changes. But like, I think this here shows, like, if you trained him for an 800, he has that sort of build for it, you know? Like, I think that's something that, like, if he decided he wanted to go that route, he could be really good.
I don't think it's just crazy. That. I think he has the mentality for it.
Yeah, that's it, too.
Fight for it.
Yes.
You can't teach fight.
No.
You can't teach, like, burning through that, like, red line. Some people have it. Nico Young obviously has it. But Quincy, in 800, tell me if you didn't put that time and effort into him that he couldn't go after the national record.
Just think about it. You know he's doing this off of 400 training.
And it's scary. I like him in the four. I do like him in the four. I think, like, the potential is there in the four. But, like, yeah, it definitely opens your eyes. If you're a college coach and you're like, oh, well, running 800 for the first time and you ran 150.
Like, I could see him making that transition. I could I really could. But, again, I'm kind of torn because, obviously, we're fans of him in the 400. We've seen what he's done there. And rightfully so, he's made his mark in, you know, that 400. But, like, I don't know. He could be – it's almost like it's – I don't want to say it's like a thing, Mo, because a thing did the – I mean, she was an 800 specialist when she was in high school. But she also ran the 400 a lot.
She ran up to 1500, 1500? She ran 3K. She ran
the
4, she ran the 2. She ran everything.
Yeah.
She really
ran the
did.
2?
Oh, yeah.
A thing, Mo?
Yes. Yeah. She ran, like, I think she broke 24.
A thing, Mo?
You're probably.
Yeah.
That actually rings a bell now. I guess that was before.
Are you fact-checking me?
Yeah.
Well, either way, I'm like, is there even a compare? Like, who's the comparison?
You're right. Wow, 23-63 at the AU Junior Olympics back in 2018.
Yeah.
Wild.
I mean, he's that type.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
You tell him to do something.
He'll do it.
I'm sorry. Didn't yes, mean coach. To
so what
brain.
About Quincian at 15?
No, that,
I feel like that, I think that is refreshing.
I'll say no to that.
that. Oh,
anyone at 15? Yes.
Would it be fast?
Want to put him at
15? I don't know.
Probably not.
I don't know if I. Oh, man.
So now we're. Hey. If he runs, does he run another 800 now? Like, is this it for him in the 800 this year, or do you go
maybe
after
this
more?
Year? I would say yes to this year. Yeah. I don't see him running again, but
maybe he wants to go sub 150. Maybe.
I feel like Quincy's that the guy that strives for like big marks. I can see him being like, "Yo, I've already went 150. I think I can go 149. Let's keep going until we hit." 149.
I mean, then I guess you also I can think about it too. You have to be managing though your races because you got to look at the end goal in sight.
Yeah, you
Olympic
can't
trials.
Just jump into an 800 every time you want to.
Right.
Like the top dog on the pool is still Colin Abram.
I'm not saying like right now. I'm not saying like this year, but I feel like eventually between.
Well, we were talking about this year.
Oh. Oh, see. Well, there's no U20 stuff, so got to go for the. Yeah, I say. Maybe one more, and then we shut it down. One more competitive 800 and shut it down.
Yeah. Well, nonetheless.
Because Penn, Bullis putting a... I wonder if they would put a 4x8 together for Penn.
Probably not. Like I don't think...
Split. They usually go heavy.
Yeah, I mean, they're
but it would be 4x4.
You gotta beat the teams in the 4x4.
Like, that's the thing.
That's
I mean,
the plan.
We're going all in to meet.
Yeah, you don't hedge it. Here. You don't hedge it. Go, you know, just in case you're not. Yeah.
Okay, I agree. All right, 4x4. Look out for Quincy and potential more 800s to come. All right, let's preview the Boston Marathon because this is going to be exciting with the men's field and the women's field. Again, Corey and I will be on the ground. Ashley will be in the race. So if you see Ashley running, just cheer for her on.
Oh, gosh. I don't know about that.
Cheer for Ashley on. I know we were talking about your hip. You ran 5 miles this morning.
What are you most looking forward to?
Yeah, what are you looking forward to?
I think I'm looking forward to just the environment. You know, like there's so many people that I've talked to, like family friends and that have, you know, ran the marathon before. And they always say that, like, it's just there's nothing else that compares to it. Because I've only done one marathon. I did the Houston Marathon, which... I don't know. It was kind of gross. Like, I mean, it's Houston.
Oh, so humid
it was humid. It was kind of warm. And there's just not that same crowd energy. Like, there are plenty of spots where you're just running alone, just like in the streets of Houston, which I don't know. There wasn't a whole lot to look at, I feel like, in Houston. So I feel like having that experience and then now hopefully I'm not hyping it up too much in my mind, but everyone's like, oh, it's just like it's everyone's just into it, you know, like there's so much energy, like everyone's excited. Like, I think that's what I'm looking forward to the most.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about this men's field first. Fortunately, we got some sad news that our guy, King Chez, has been withdrawn. Like, he withdrew himself from the race. So this kind of opens it up. I feel like makes the race a little bit more interesting. I was really looking forward to seeing what King Chez could do. We saw him compete at New York City. So I was like, okay, King Chez is starting to, you know, ramp up the mileage a little bit more. But Ashley, is there an athlete that you're looking forward to in this men's field?
Well, I think the biggest storyline here has to be Evans Chebet. I mean, he's won this two-time champion. He's trying to attempt a third victory. I mean, he could become the king of Boston here. Like, obviously, if he can win this defending champion. To me, he's got to be the highlight.
Yeah. I also want to throw in the mix also Gabriel Guillet, who was the runner-up last year. He went 206. As you mentioned, Chebet, defending champion here, he went 205. And then Albert Corori, he dropped a 206 at the New York City Marathon and finished with a 208 in Boston last year, and he finished fourth. But we also, I feel like, have to keep in mind Cissé Lima, who went 201 at the Valencia Marathon and set a new personal best there. So Cissé will also be in this mix as well. So
I think it's worth noting that, like, I think the reason why I'm like so impressed by Evans Chebet and just curious to see what he does, not only to win it to win the Boston Marathon alone on itself has this kind of lore to it. You know, like it's so, I mean, Boston's considered one of the most challenging world majors, and to do that once is already a check mark.
Yeah.
You do it twice, like, goodness gracious, to win back to back to back to back, like that would be incredible. So I think we're all just, I think everyone's really curious to just see if like that feat can be accomplished.
Yeah, I agree. Hopefully it won't be like New York City Marathon, like how the girls field out went very, very slow. Hopefully it's a little bit more upbeat.
Well, Boston's exciting. A little bit different, you know, like it's not like, you know, New York City or Berlin where really like, you know, some of the faster ones where you have to go with the course, right? Like, cause Boston, like if you go too hard down the beginning, like in the downhills, like you could be cooked for the rest of the marathon once you actually get to those hills. So I think when you're looking at tactics, like it could be a little more conservative at the beginning because you're trying to save energy for the later stages of the race.
Yeah, very true.
But I think the course is a little faster than most people give it credit for.
Yeah, I guess it's true.
Historically, it's had some pretty fast times mm-hmm. on it. Weather, 58 degrees is a high on Monday, slight wind, little chance for precipitation. So I think we could get a really good
day. It could
day.
Be fast,
and
yeah.
And sometimes it's dependent on that, like, and how the race actually plays out is dependent on how what kind of day you get.
Yeah.
But for you in particular, you might get a good day. What are do you know what your fit is? What do you
Oh God, I don't know. With? See, originally I like wanted to go close to the 310 range, but then I hurt my hip, so I don't know what we're going to do.
I was asking for like your fit. Like, what are you wearing? Like,
oh, my fit. I thought you meant like my fitness, like
meant,
range.
I thought you meant her fitness too. I was so confused.
Is it the arm sleeve? Like, what?
Oh, no.
What, you know?
How are you just showing
like
out,
Ashley? Shorts and a tank top, I guess.
Oh, Ashley, so you're going
what
basic.
We need a singlet.
A mile split.
A mile split singlet.
Or a flow track singlet.
Maybe co-branded. Co-branded. You know? I would wear that.
Yeah.
Too bad we don't. We need some.
What? Which shoes are you wearing? Because that's the next question.
Well, that's a good point. I think. I guess. Didn't we get some, what is it, the Nike Vaporflies?
Yeah, yeah.
I may wear those. Okay. Those are comfortable. I'm a big Nike. I like the Nike Pegasus, you know, like trainers.
Yes.
So maybe that's what I'll go with. I think that's what I'm going to go with.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ashley running the style.
I don't know
what
style, but.
What's your color?
My color?
Your color scheme.
Gosh, like, I feel like I'm getting grilled here.
No, I'm curious because the people want to know how to find you out
I mean,
in the crowd.
Okay, I wear a lot of blue, so maybe I'll wear like a blue
okay.
tank top, some black running shorts, nothing spectacular, ponytail. There we go.
If you get in the elite zone, you should start off at the front. You should go for one of those sprint starts, you know, you're
and
on camera
like,
for about a minute
yeah,
or two.
Uh-huh. And then just jog back into the pack where I belong, you know.
There you go.
That's my 5 seconds of fame.
I love it. All right, let's preview the women's field now. I feel like this has a lot of big names in it, too. From, you know, Helen Obiri, who was the runner-up at the Houston Half Marathon, defending Boston Marathon champion. She went 2:21. Of course, we've had Emma Bates, who was fifth last year, who will be in this race again. Des Linden, who we're huge fans of here at Flow Track, will be in the mix. Sharon Locati, third at New York City Marathon. But Ashley, are there any other individuals that like you're just looking forward to seeing?
Well, for me, it's Helen Obiri, right? Yeah. Like, can she defend? She won the New York City Marathon. She won the Boston Marathon
yeah.
last year. No one had done that for like years and years and years and years.
Right.
When I saw her do that, I was like, dang, this girl knows how to win a freaking marathon, you know? Like, and so I feel like New York's kind of similar in a way where, like, it doesn't always, it's, I know we kind of talked about, like, it can be fast, but, like, it's not like you're going a consistent pace, I would say, the entire time because of the ebbs and flows of the course. And she seems to do really well with that. New York's kind of similar to Boston in that way. And so I feel like she's going to come into this having that experience, knowing what it takes. And now she has a full year since then of her getting experience, getting that training, you know, training for the marathon. I think I'm just really curious to see what she can do. And then, you know, other athletes as well. I want to mention Edna Kiplagat. I mean, she's been around the sport for such a long time. She's gone 2:19 PR back all the way in 2012. But again, she's been in the sport for so long. Curious to see what she does here. Also have Sarah Hall, which I think is interesting because
yes.
she just missed out on that yeah. U.S. Olympic marathon team. But she said, you know what? I'm not going to let that like ruin the rest of my season basically. So she decides to shift goals. She's running Boston. I'm really curious to see that. And then Emma Bates as well. She had to pull out of the Olympic marathon trials prior to that due to injury. So she's going to come into this with a new perspective, again, shifting those goals.
I love that. Corey, any thoughts on the women's field? Anybody from the chat?
No, well, the chat's staying on U.S. trialist and U.S. team.
Oh man!
But
I was
going
to talk today.
You know, for the marathon, I loving Sarah Hall. I saw her at the Olympic trials, and we saw her compete really well. I mean, just always a fight for 26.2. Right, anything can happen. So seeing her go out there and really compete was strong. Seeing that now to double back here in Boston, definitely some fight from her. But you know, we'll see.
Yes. So Corey and I will be landing Friday, hitting the ground. Brian Clay is taking off this weekend, as we mentioned. Brian Dybul, our amazing colleague, will be there too. Ashley will be running in Boston. So all of us are busy this weekend.
Yes, very busy.
Somehow involved in track and field or marathon.
And get some jogs in there. Get some yogs.
Hey, y'all gonna yog? You're gonna yog?
Yeah.
Are we?
I mean, I know I am. Are
you?
Well,
that means I have to.
What general vicinity are y'all
Oh, we're in
here?
Everett, I think. Oh, we're like 10 minutes, 20 minutes up.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I think the trip seems small, but based on traffic, it could be a longer commute.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think we're in Everett. Yeah. Where are you at?
Yeah. We're all the way out, like closer to, I think it starts in Hopkinton, the race. Okay. So we're closer there. A, cheaper. B, just it's easier and it's actually closer to at least you can.
And I know on marathon day there is a Red Sox game, I believe.
Really?
Really?
Oh, I didn't know that.
I believe so. Yeah.
Ooh.
Is Flow Track going to the Red Sox game?
Well, no, because the Boston Marathon.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Oh, that's right. I thought it was like after. No. I don't know where my brain was at. I was thinking maybe it was later. We just hit both.
Maybe it's an evening game.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Could have been evening.
Is it an evening game?
No, I think it's going on at the same time. April 15th is at 10 a.m.
Who put that together? Who designed that?
I mean, it's Boston. It's baseball season. Season just opened up.
But it conflicts with the Boston Marathon.
There's 162 games in the year.
On a Monday?
They play baseball a lot, Olivia. I don't know what to tell you.
On a Monday?
It's trying to steal the marathon's thunder.
Yeah, no.
Hey, there's plenty of people that love running, respect it. You'll have crowds the whole way down the line. So.
All right. Well, until then, make sure you catch us in Boston cheering for Ashley. And also, Corey and I will be there as well. So make sure you stay tuned to Flow Track, because, again, lots of big things going on this weekend. So we'll bring you all the content that you need. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Make sure you like, subscribe, all the things. And we'll see you sometime next week.